Welcome to the Jude 23 Community Podcast. It's clarity for those who are curious or confused about all things Christianity. I'm Jeremiah Wood, along with my co-host, Nick Hardcastle, and this is episode 4. So, Nick, how are we doing tonight?
Oh, good, man. Just definitely in some prayers for people back home. If I'm going to start off with anything, definitely kind of want to help share just, you know, back in Texas where I grew up, there's been a lot of loss and some chaos has kind of slept into that part of the world. So if you're our listeners, maybe at this point in time, please pray for Canadian Texas as they kind of go to recover. Other than that, just kind of going at it, and we made it to episode 4.
Yeah, we did. And for those who don't know, we had some major winds, from 40 to like 90 mile an hour winds for about a 20 hour period or longer. Yeah. And in that process, when you're out in the plains, like in Kansas and Oklahoma and West Texas, the wind starts to blow like that, and fire just takes off and lights everything in its path. And so that's kind of what was happening down in and around where Nick grew up. And so, your prayers for that area would be much appreciated. And we thank you for them. So, Nick, this is episode 4. And over the course of the last few episodes, we've been talking about a testimony. And this is a testimony that you shared at church a couple months ago. And it was a testimony that hit me to the core. And when you shared your testimony, it like lit that fire in me that said, that I felt like the Holy Spirit was just speaking right to my heart and saying, now's the time, get this podcast started, go tell Nick, we're getting ready to roll. You remember sharing that testimony at church?
I do, because I didn't want to get up and talk, but it was, it was right. Good. And, you know, I've been trying to think about the most appropriate way to share. I guess kind of get into it. I like the question where most of us start our Bible at. Because I would specifically like to say, and then I'm not trying to put like Christianity and Christians on a blast, because I am one, but I think we like to start our Bible at chapter 3, verse 6. And we are talking about the fall today. We're not going to be reading, but please go back and review if we're going to be talking specifically about Genesis 3. But, you know, Genesis 3, 6 is pretty much where the action of the fall happened. And it says, so when the woman saw that the tree was good for food, and it was a delight to the eyes, and that the tree was to be desired to make one wise, she took of its fruit and ate it, and she gave some to her husband who was with her, and he ate it. And then both their eyes were opened, and they knew that they were naked. I think that's specifically where a lot of the time in Christianity where we like to start our Bible, because it really resonates with us. Sin, we're sinful humans. That's the definition of us. But it's also in conflict to really everything that the Lord has kind of been baking into this greater story that we have at this point in time. And the big thing about that is that whenever I was growing up, whether right, wrong, or indifferent, I was in a relatively legalistic church, and not to say that anything that or to kind of condemn any of the church that I grew up in, but it was very legalistic in its point of view, which is not an uncommon thing that we probably find in many of our churches in America today, especially in, you know, kind of small towns like where I grew up. It's you are a sinful human. You don't need a sin. It's kind of throwing the book at it. And it became relatively daunting for me to really recognize the fact that I had a struggle and an issue with God at that point in time, because I was being held to a set of rules of which I would never be able to hold up a measure. And if that's the way that we're going to look at the Bible, if that's the way that we're going to look at the relationship with God, the relationship with Jesus, I kind of question the ability for us to even pull it off. It's something that we can't do. But fortunately, through the work of others, family, friends, and most importantly, the work of the good Lord, the Lord kind of revealed to me a different definition. And it's that the Bible was intentionally started in chapter one, and the definition of humans in chapter one was in 1:31 and said that God saw all that he made and it was very good indeed. So if we are really trying to define ourselves and where our Bible starts at, it needs to be where God's definition of us starts. Because if we don't do that, we're really going to put ourselves in a trap and a hole. We're not going to be able to interact with this story. We're not going to be able to kind of find ourselves in it. And it's really important because, like Jeremiah had brought up, this story is ongoing to today. And it's something that if we start our definition in chapter 3 and say that the world is sinful, the world is fallen, we just live in a broken world, we are ignoring the simple fact that God told us that he had a different definition of it. And that is the world is good. Creation is good and people are good. And I would challenge us as a Christian race to actually sit back there and say that we like to throw around the broken world concept at every drop of a hat. And I understand some very bad things happen. We were talking about just that fire a second ago. But that's not the definition that God has of his creation. So it should be the last thing that we define creation by. Whenever we interact with others, whenever we interact with people, it doesn't matter who they are. They are good because that is who God made them. And I'd like to say that, you know, the further throughout the Bible, and sorry, Jeremiah, if I'm getting to preaching, someone else had that same definition, and it was Christ. And really, I mean, in all honesty, if we really just sit there and observe Christ's life, he came for people. And it would even be said about him later, and I'm not trying to just misappropriately throw Romans back in Genesis, but it says later about him in Genesis, and Genesis 5, verses 6 through 8, for while we were still weak, at the right time, Christ died for the ungodly. For one will scarcely die for a righteous person, though perhaps for a good person, one would dare to even die. But God showed his love for us so that while we were still sinners, Christ died for us. And it became abundantly clear through a deeper and better relationship of the Father of why Jesus would do this. It's because his definition of us is that we are good. He doesn't hold us to the measure of Genesis chapter 3, the fall of sin. He holds us to the measure that God defined the world by in the very beginning. So, yeah. I guess that's kind of my testimony or really tie to this. But it's also, I guess, my challenge that I try to put on or work with every day, but also I'll work with it a little bit better. Let's see the definition of everybody is good and accept that God started his story intentionally in Genesis 1 for us to partner in that creation with him.
Yeah, that's so good. I appreciate that, Nick. I appreciate you sharing. I know it was a little nerve-wracking at church, and it's probably a little nerve-wracking tonight, but it's still such a good testimony that our, and this is so prevalent in churches right now today, is that too many people start off their story with, I'm a dirty, rotten, filthy sinner, thinking that that's where their beginning was. And their beginning was not there. Their beginning was in the beginning when God created. And God created man and woman in the image of God. He created them and he saw it. It was very, very good. I love that. I love that testimony. And I really appreciate you sharing. And I'm sure that this has gotten a lot of people's wheels turning and wanting to know a little bit more about, okay, and this is honestly one of the most talked about or asked about topics in all of Scripture. You know, everything pertaining to Genesis chapter 3, the fall of man, the beginning of sin, and all of this. But as we jump into it, we're going to answer several of these questions tonight. We're going to talk about what is the fall? What did we fall from? We're going to talk about what was the cause of the fall. And then we're going to talk about what the consequences of the fall are. And then we are going to kind of wrap it all up at the end. If we get to the end, I don't want to make this a terribly long podcast, but if we get to the end, we're going to talk about how Genesis chapter 3 is the story of the fall of humanity and what it means for us today. So, Nick, you ready to get into it?
Yeah, love to.
Let's get at it, brother. Let's just dive right in. Let's just start with this question, what is the fall? And, you know, Theopedia.com defines the fall as the traditional term referring to the first sin of Adam and Eve, which brought judgment upon both nature and mankind. So sin and death has entered the world and humanity has been affected by it ever since. And so when we talk about the fall, what we're talking about is the very first sin that Adam and Eve committed in Genesis chapter 3.
Yeah, and I guess really in total context to that, it's probably also should be considered, I guess, the first entrance of kind of like the anti-story or rebellion, because a lot of people sit there and question and say, like, well, you know, God told them previously that, you know, you shouldn't eat of this fruit, and then they go do it, but they didn't know good from evil. Well, they knew the definition of good at that point in time, and that was a definition that God told them, was that this creation that I've put you into and that I've asked you to partner with, I'm just asking you to walk with me and trust me in it. So probably the best way to also think about this is the fall is when humans actually kind of started a definition of what they wanted to find as good, as opposed to trusting the Lord and what he defined as good.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's right. That's real good. So Nick, if we're talking about the fall, I think the logical question after that is what did we fall from? And maybe you could take that, if you have that in front of you, talk about just kind of that first point. What was it that God created, and what was it that we actually fell from when the fall actually took place?
Yeah, now that's a good point to bring up. The number one thing is that God had been putting order into the world at this point in time. And this order was kind of going back to, we talked about how there was chaos and how he'd structured it and how he had really brought us into from something that was just really kind of a chaotic nothingness into what is actually God put in to have a harmonized creation. And in that harmonized creation, it became kind of a term of shalom, or really kind of God's definition of kingdom, which is a kingdom of peace and shalom. So really at that point in time, we specifically pretty much started to fall from the kingdom of peace that God had built, and unity and walking hand in hand and stride with God and partnering in this kingdom with him.
Yeah. So yeah, that's good. And so when God created everything, he created everything in this harmonious state of shalom and peace, right? It was lacking nothing. It was lacking conflict. It was more than the lack of conflict. It was this wholeness and completeness, and nothing about it was missing. And so when we talk about what we fell from, ultimately we fell from this perfect state of shalom. We fell from this perfect state of existence that we had when we had peace with God. And when we fell from this place of shalom, we fell from three specific things. We fell from relationship with God, the perfect and unhindered relationship that we had with God. We fell from the relationship that we have with each other, this perfect and unhindered relationship we had with one another as humanity. And third, we fell from this relationship that we had with creation. It was a perfect, unhindered relationship that we had from creation. And the moment that we made the choice to sin against God, and we fell from that perfect place of shalom, and it cost us the perfect relationship we had with God, with one another, and with all of creation. And we've been suffering from that ever since. And so to answer the question about what did we fall from, it would be safe to say that we fell from just perfect peace or perfect shalom that God provided in our relationship with him, in our relationship to one another, in our relationship to all creation.
Yeah, I mean, that's so good. And I mean, really, even on the back end of the story, you pretty much just see those things unfold. Talk about relationship with one another. Adam goes from calling his wife Eve, or from woman to Eve. So he changes his definition to really like what she does. So instead of the fact that, you know, originally whenever she was like Isha was her name, meaning woman, it was mm-hmm. about who she is, what God defined her as, what God made her is. And then it became, I'm going to define you by what you can do. So it really just brought in also kind of a broken understanding of our concept of creation too. Like you were saying, and you know, it's just so good. The fact that the deeper you dive into this story, you see this kind of like, anti-creation kind of fall back into it. You know, one thing that specifically really stands out is the fact that we talk about how, you know, we had to have a fall, or a separation kind of from God at that point in time. But even though that happened, it didn't mean that God had left us. Yeah. He kind of decided that he was going to meet us where we're at.
Yeah.
He wasn't going to just sit there and say, well, you messed this one up. There's going to be some thorns and thistles instead of trees now, and you're going to work at it, and good luck to you. But he actually still sat there and said that we have a different definition of our relationship, but I'm still here with you.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's so good because, you know, we talked about, and you mentioned this earlier, about the chaotic nothingness, the tohu va-bohu, right? And God separated the chaotic nothingness. He filled it with new creation and blessed it to be a blessing, right? That separation, filling, and blessing that we talked about. And it's just crazy because the moment we divert from God's way and choose our own way is the moment we find ourselves in that chaotic nothingness again. Yeah. And so like you said about Eve, Adam called her woman, meaning this is how God created you. This is the essence of the image of God displayed in front of me. But when sin entered the world, Adam changed her definition from her essence to her performance. And, oh, dude, that's such a good word.
Yeah, I mean, it's the same stuff that we do often today.
Right.
You know, Jeremiah, you're a realtor.
Yes.
Your definition is going to be in that. And it's like, no, actually your definition is actually in the fact that you are a servant of God and the profession of realty today. It's not the fact that your real estate license defined you, and it's far from that.
Right.
So really, I mean, like the fall is us just kind of sitting there saying that creation that God gave us, we're going to just set that to the side. And whenever we just go ahead and start our definition at the fall, that's just what we continue to do instead of being able to see his children for who they are and who he created them to be.
Dude, that's correct. That's so good. Let's move on to question number three.
Yeah.
So if we just defined the fall and defined what we fell from, what was the cause of the fall? And ultimately the answer to that question was sin. Sin was the cause of the fall in Genesis chapter 3. And so to understand what sin is, we kind of have to put a little bit of definition to the terms. And so first thing that we have to understand is that sin is a disobedience and a rebellion to God's command. And so when we read in Genesis chapter 3, when God put man in the garden and made everything good, he gave him some specific instructions. And then halfway through Genesis chapter 3, Adam disobeyed those instructions. And it was the disobedience that caused the fall to begin to happen. It was the introduction to sin from Adam's choices that really began to bring the fall about. And it was more than just a disobedient decision, though. It was a direct rebellion against the authority of God, if you want to put it that way. We don't like to think in terms of authority a lot these days, but rebellion is exactly that. It is the knowing and willfuling choice to go against what your authority has instructed you to do.
Yeah, I mean, and you see their response in there in the story, really, whenever you they understood that it was rebellion, especially after it happened. When their eyes were opened up, they not only had shame introduced to them the first time, but the first thing they did was when they heard the sound of God, they hid. If they didn't really think that it was rebellion, well, they should just be standing there in the trees, just waiting for him.
Right.
But yeah, that's such an important thing. It's such an important topic because, there is an authoritative nature of God. And if this, hopefully this podcast has showed anything so far, we've taken a long time to focus on chapters 1, 2, and 3, which could probably take you 15 minutes to read them all together. But it's really been simply focused on the fact that not only are we trying to sit there and say creation is good, but the authority of God is good too.
Correct.
And our partnership is to trust his authority, and it's to honor his authority. Whether we often like it or not, we like to sit there and say that we rebel against authority, but people need some sort of authority in there. And I think that the Lord knew that, and it's not the authority of other people. It's the authority of the Lord.
Right.
For us to have him kind of at the center and definition of our universe. I'm happy that you brought up the fact that it was rebellion against authority, because it's so different than just thinking about it. This just being like stub my toe, said a curse word type sin.
Right. Yeah. It's not a naivety. It's a deliberate choice that ends up taking place. But I think also it's not just limited to disobedience and rebellion. When we talk about sin, we're also talking about how there is an active and a passive participation of breaking the law of God. And so when we talk about actively or passively breaking God's law, what we're talking about is that how God has laid out a certain instructions for us. And when we go through scripture, we're going to learn this later on, that there are multiple laws that God put in place, right? There's a moral law, there's a civil law, and there's also a ceremonial law that the people of Israel ended up going through. But for us, we are beheld to the moral laws of God. And when we look at the story in Genesis 3, we see that Eve was the one that took the apple and ate. And at that time, she was actively breaking the moral law of God. But Adam was the one that was given specific instructions even before Eve was created. Mm-hmm. And he had the responsibility of managing that commandment to his wife. And so he was passively breaking the moral laws of God. And so whether or not we are actively breaking the moral laws of God, or we are passively breaking the moral laws of God, whenever we are breaking the moral laws of God, we are in a position where we are sinning against God himself.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like me telling you not to steal and then me watching you shoplift the candy bar at the convenience store, right?
Right. Or you knowing that stealing's wrong and forgot to inform me about it. And here I am because somebody else was whispering in my ear, oh, it'll be fine. It's okay. You can just take it and go.
Yeah. No big deal. It'll be all right. I mean, the funny part about this, I mean, we start talking about the law also. This is honestly the definition of the law at the time.
because they were pretty much just told, don't eat from the tree at the knowledge of good and evil. It's not like they even had these more definite structured laws.
Right.
And it does go back to that simple fact that we're talking about specific rebellion against the Lord. And you can't, like, if there's a rebellion, whether you're actively or passively rebelling against it, you're a part of it. It's not like you go down to protest at the street corner and you're standing in the back all day. And somebody showed up and you didn't have a sign in your hand, but, oh, how did I get here? You're participating in it, whether you fully want to admit it or not. So it's not specifically the woman's fault.
Right. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely. And it's just that very thing. 'Cause we like to, especially in our modern, you know, kind of red pill culture, we like to blame women for everything. But the reality of it is there was a passive participant who was not living up to the expectation that God had laid out for him that allowed this type of sin to take place. And so a passive part in the breaking of God's law is still playing a part in breaking God's law. And I think that's one thing that most people don't ever consider, is that neither one of them were off the hook. You know, man wasn't off the hook. Woman wasn't off the hook. They were both responsible for the situation that they found themselves in. Whether they were actively responsible or passively responsible, they were both responsible. I think the third thing that we have to understand when we talk about what is sin, it's rebellion, it's disobedience, it's actively and passively breaking God's law. But the third thing it is, it's trying to either subvert or usurp the role of God for yourself. So when we talk about subverting something, we talk about undermining the power of authority of something. So when we subvert the role of God, we are subverting, we are trying to undermine the authority of God and trying to take authority for ourselves. But when we usurp something, these are weird words, I know, but they best describe what's taking place. Because when we usurp something, we're taking a position of power and authority by force, right? And so it's not just that we're undermining the power and authority, but then we're trying to take that power and authority for ourselves so that we ourselves would be the power and authority. So to sin in this way is to undermine the power and authority of God and to place ourselves in the position of God, making ourselves the center of all power and authority rather than God being the center of all power and authority.
Yeah. And I'd even also kind of challenge to sit there and say, we are also letting sin define what's the sinner as well.
Right.
But, you know, really, if you go back and you like read chapter 3 and then compare it back to chapter 2, and then you go back and you look at the specific translation, it doesn't say that the tree of knowledge of good and evil, which was the one that they weren't supposed to eat off of, was in the middle of the garden. It was the tree of life was in the middle of the garden. And you're not supposed to eat of the tree of knowledge of good and evil. Well, what I've heard taught about this, and Marty Solomon was the kind of source. So I guess if you have a problem, take it up with him. But I don't know how you can. He doesn't read his email, I don't think. So good luck contacting him. it says, you know, later in chapter 3 that Eve said that she wasn't supposed to eat of the tree at the center of the garden, and she was specifically referring to the one of knowledge of good and evil. What it said at that point in time was the tree of the knowledge of good and evil had become the center of Eve's garden. It became the center of her definition of it. It was what she desired, is what she desired to have placed at the center of her heart. So she honestly was in her own right trying to recreate or reestablish where the universe was. And it wasn't aligning with God, it was aligning with her. So she was somewhat either subverting or usurping the definition and structure that God had put in place for her.
Yeah. No, that's right. Dude, that's so good. That is so good. And whenever we try to, whenever we try to make ourselves the center of anything, we begin to miss out on the whole picture of it all. Because the picture of it is that God himself, you know, that tree of life, he is life and he is at the center. And when we, whenever we sin in this way, what we're doing is we're tempted to get for ourselves what God has promised to provide. Mm-hmm. And so when we want to get for ourselves, we have to do it in our own power, in our own authority, by our own rules, with our own laws. And the only way that we can do that is we can undermine the authority of God and we can take the authority for ourselves. And when we try to provide for ourselves, it never works out.
No, I mean, we can see that on a daily basis with the fact that, you know, many of us, you can pretty easily walk around. And I was trying to bring up earlier about like not defining that we live in a broken world because of God's definition of his good, but the fact that if you choose to take on the definition of the broken world, it is the definition that consumes you. And you can kind of see that in the culture that we have today. If you go down and you see, whether it be like the number of injustices that happen on a daily basis, the things that happen to children, people that are, on drugs. And I mean, the fact that, you know, we kind of take over the authoritative role and define it. Mm-hmm. It just doesn't turn out for us.
Yeah. Well, because we're trying to do exactly that. We're not, when God created everything, his pure motive was shalom.
Yeah.
And we don't try to get for ourselves for shalom's sake. Mm-hmm. We try to get for ourselves' sake. And the only way we typically tend to get for ourselves is at the cost and expense of somebody else, typically exploiting somebody else in some very significant way. And it becomes, like you said, the anti-story of what it was that God intended for his creation to be when he created it in perfect peace and harmony mm-hmm. with one another.
Yeah.
So let's go on and kind of, as we're talking about sin, regardless of how you choose to sin, whether if it's disobedience, rebellion, whether it's usurping authority, or mm-hmm. whether it's actively or passively breaking God's law, sin always begins with believing three different lies. There's three lies that we see in Genesis chapter 3, and that's where sin starts. The first lie is this, is that God can't be trusted. Nick, how many times have you ever felt that in your own heart at some point in time, that I can't trust God in this matter?
Well, the fact of the testimony that I shared earlier, just in, I guess, me having a spoiler alert of the three lies on front of me in the screen, I felt all these lies a number of times.
right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's kind of like human nature. If something bad happens to me, obviously God did this. He doesn't want me to, I can't trust him. He's not going to provide for me. He's not going to be, you know, what he told me he is going to be for me.
Right. And we look at scripture and it says that, that God has given us everything that we need for life and godliness. That's in 2 Peter 1:3. Mm-hmm. And he's also promised to provide us everything that we need. But the moment that we begin to doubt that this is actually true for our lives is the moment that we step into a mindset where we believe the lie that God can't be trusted to give me everything that I need. Mm-hmm. Oftentimes because we confuse what we need with what we want. And if what we need doesn't match up with what we want, or if what we need comes at the cost of what we want, we almost always believe the lie so we can hang on to the want at the cost of losing what we need.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think it's just a common human struggle. And I think that, you know, like this lie number two that you have out on this outline, you know, that God's holding back from you. I think we take that one just to the heart, just the same as well. And, you know, if you really just relate it back to
Genesis 3, it pretty much just goes back to the struggle that really kind of, I guess, somewhat started this whole thing off in, you know, chapter 3, verse 4, whenever Eve's telling the serpent, well, if I eat this piece of fruit, I'll die. But the serpent said to the woman, you will surely not die. For God knows when you eat of it, your eyes will be opened and you will be like God. Well, if God's holding out on me, well, I want to be like him.
Yeah.
I mean, like, we start trying to get in our own mind and sitting there and say, like, heck yeah, even at that point in time, I want to be like him. But the simple fact is, when Eve had misplaced her trust, whenever she had just altered, whenever she decided that she was going to kind of subvert the role of God and the intentionality of God in her mind and change the fact that his definition was going to be sufficient, she starts thinking, well, I need to be like him. It started to kind of cloud her judgment whenever she had just been told, I mean, I guess through the creation of Adam and herself, that they were good, but also that they were made in the image of God and they were here to partner with him in this.
Right. And this idea that God is holding back from us, it really perpetuates this lie that God has more for you, but he doesn't want you to have it. He's restricting you from being able to have everything that he has for you. And it emphasizes this idea that God is preventing you from true fullness, right? God is preventing you from true happiness. God is preventing you from having true satisfaction of everything that life has to offer. And when we believe this lie, what we end up doing is we end up rejecting the truth and overindulging ourselves in all the things of the flesh. And when we indulge in all the things of the flesh, we find ourselves continuously trying to feed a beast that can never be satiated. It is a life that is always wanting more, 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 and more. I'm telling you, you can never be rich enough. You can never be popular enough. You can never be have enough status or have enough stuff or just fill in the blank. The true fullness that we could ever feel or know or understand is going to only ever be found in God. And this concept that God is holding back from you will only ever be a lie that will lead you into more despair and hungry for even more, but you only ever feed it with more despair.
Yeah. I mean, and even whenever you are, you know, kind of quote unquote feeding it, like you said, it's momentary. It's whatever you can get a hold of, but that quickly goes away. So then you kind of, like you said, have to go into your definition of the more. So tell me about this, this lie number three that you have.
Lie number three. Well, the first lie was, God can't be trusted. Second lie is God is holding back from you. And the third lie is that God does not want his best for you. And, the serpent told Adam and Eve in the garden, it says, you will be like God, knowing good and evil. And so this lie assumes that God is not going to give you the best that he has to give, but you have to go and get it for yourself. The lie says that we don't need God because we can be our own God with our own rules and our own glory. The lie also says that if we achieve that, then we can truly find happiness, fulfillment, and purpose. And so, Nick, I think one of my favorite lines in that explanation is that not only can we be our own God with our own rules, but we do that for the purpose of seeking our own glory. Can you speak to that a little bit?
Whenever you kind of talk about trying to define your own glory and really self-promotion, it kind of goes into the simple fact that we are doing really the anti-story of God. And I know we've brought this term up a number of times, but it's really just the thing that you're trying to go after at that point in time. It's the all-consuming fact that you will do whatever you need to either be sufficient for yourself or get ahead. So like whenever you start making your own rules, whenever you want to fulfill your own glory, whenever you want to be the definition of your own happiness. It really is just kind of the full, or really the fulfillment of full self-indulgence. And whenever you have that, it's really just honestly the simple fact that you don't really even care about the rest of creation. You are the center of your creation, and the fact of this world is here to serve you, and it better recognize that. I think so many struggle with that today, to where, you know, it's all about me. But it's just a sad thing. It's just, you know, you see things happen, whether it's, you know, fires fires like in the Texas Panhandle or you know, disasters, tornadoes, anything like that. You can get shaken up really quick whenever it's all about you, because you can't control that. And at the end of it, it's really about the fact that you're here to interact in this situation of creation that God has put you in, and the story that you're a part of.
Yeah. So, Nick, I think that we should probably call this a wrap tonight, and we'll come back with part two next week. Yeah. So tonight we talked about what is the fall and what is sin. Next week we're going to talk about what is the consequence of the fall, mm-hmm. and what does that mean for us today as humanity. So
sweet.
Figured it'd be a good place to stop, and because I just don't want to rush the last part. I think the last half is really going to be the most important, because it's not our intention to bring a whole lot of like doom and despair. What our intentions are is to bring a reality to the situation, and for as real as the reality of the situation is, how even more real is the fact that the solution is even better.
And to add to that, the solution is not even better, but not just better, but God is good in it all. And he has been since the beginning.
Absolutely.
So, yeah. I mean, I think it's a good place to stop, because we've been talking a lot about, really the anti-story. So I think we can come in here and clean it up. Not just clean it up, but drive home the fact that there is something else. But it's probably going to take us another 45 minutes. So
it will. It definitely will. All right. Hey, thanks for joining the episode 4 of the Jude 23 Community Podcast, where we find clarity for those who are curious or confused about all things Christianity. I'm Jeremiah Wood. This is Nick Hardcastle. And we'll see you again next time.